Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show, one that I think takes the show in a slightly different direction. This is always about people being able to help themselves, to learn what they don't know. And to me, today's show is very important with what we've gone through over the past year. I see patients every day, and the anxiety and the just, in some instances, hopelessness, like there's nowhere that they can turn to try to get their lives back, especially if people have been quarantined and really have cut themselves off from their friends and family. And the holiday season, I think, is poignant for some people who actually live in lockdown states, or because of health issues, or because they just can't get to family and friends. I think there needs to be in some place that you can go that's, I don't want to put it in the way of a safe space, because I don't mean it that way, but a place that centers you, that balances you, that gives you energy so that you can face what we've been facing, and hopefully we'll stop facing sooner rather than later. Today, I want to welcome a guest, Mr. Conan Milner. He is the health reporter for the Epoch Times. He's graduated from Wayne State University with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in figure and landscaping painting. And I love the fine arts because it's a way to express yourself in such a personal way. And I think it empowers you. And we're going to talk today about being able to meditate. And I think people have a lot of conceptions about what meditation is. And I'm looking forward to our conversation. So, Mr. Milner, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on, Dr. George.
You know, I'm curious to know how you, as a health reporter, you see everything. But what is the thing that strikes you and turns you on, really, about meditation?
Well, I'm always looking for subjects where people can take control of their health, whether it's their diet or exercise or just any method where it doesn't cost any money and you get to make choices for that affect your health and your outlook on life. And meditation really covers this better than anything. I don't do a ton of articles on it because I don't know that that's the first thing that people think about. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to talk about it too much because I know there's some people who are perhaps turned off by meditation. But when I do get a chance to broach that subject, it's something I get excited about because it's a practice that has helped me immensely in my life. And I want to be able to share that with readers.
You know, when people think of meditation, especially in the times that we live in, where it's all about external stimulation, you know, children and their cell phones and video games, it's always outside in. And I wonder if you think, I have a feeling that people aren't comfortable in this day and age with themselves. Like they may be afraid to go inward and really expand quiet time. Is that something that you think people, or have you come across something like that?
Oh, for sure. I don't think that our culture really invites us to retreat inside. Everything that we come in contact with is to externalize our experience, whether it's television or cell phones or the different mediums that you mentioned. We kind of get the sense that it's boring to be inside. We've seen everything that's in there. When we do get a chance to go inside, perhaps it's when we have insomnia. We can't. We have all these thoughts that are running in our head, and it becomes not an inviting place, but just something to avoid. And mm-hmm. We look for distractions to keep us out of there. So, I don't think that. We get an opportunity to go inside unless there's something that prompts us to seek it.
That's a really good point. And your comment just made me think of it a different way. I mean, part of our society seems to be about becoming part of a whole. and sublimating yourself into a collective mindset or a group think where you look a certain way, you should think a certain way. And meditation to me seems to be very individual. And if we are putting power and it's trendy to be part of a group, maybe, is this another thing? I mean, well, first of all, am I wrong about meditation being a very individual pursuit? You really are in with yourself, away from everybody else. Do you think that that is being, in a way, thwarted because it's all about you being part of your group and sublimating your individuality?
I definitely think you're onto something. I don't think you can, you know, for example, you can't broadcast or photograph your meditation experience on Instagram. there's no way to capture it. It is a very intimate experience with yourself, and one that you know, people can teach you the techniques to go inside, but it's a journey that you take alone.
And in that journey, do you find that people, I don't know, sound, again, I don't want to judge folks, but does it take courage to be able to say, I'm just going to do me, I'm going to turn it off, I'm going to accept whatever feeling I get from doing this? Is there some instance of that also?
For sure. I think that, like you suggested, we're often concerned about what others think of us, how we're perceived. And I remember when I really got into meditation, maybe 20 years or so ago, and I wanted to do it all the time. And I would get, I got the feeling from people that I was ignoring them. Not that I would take time to meditate when, you know, I was in a crowd or anything, but it can be off-putting for someone to just be in their own space in a way that you can't engage with them. I mean, you can't send a text to someone who's you know, in that meditative space. The only way to reach them is to interrupt them. And I don't think there's any protocol in our culture to navigate that. It's to see someone meditating, unless you understand what the process is about, it can be alienating for people outside.
I think you're right on that. And, you know, there's different types of meditation, isn't there? Most people think of it as maybe just yoga or deprivation. You know, you're just in a, sometimes those deprivation tanks or those, I forget what they're called. But total removal, or you're alone, or you have to take a class. What are the different, I know we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I just want to start off by, what are the different types of meditation?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I'm not quite sure how to answer it. I think that there are, you know, obviously different schools of thought when it comes to meditation techniques. To me, meditation is, and I get this from, you know, the Buddhist understanding, it's reaching a state of no thought or intention. So sometimes people say, you know, prayer, for example, is meditation. But, you know, for me, that doesn't really square up, because there's an intention there. You're seeking something, or even if it's just gratitude, there's, you know, there's thought present. But for me, this goal of seeking emptiness, trying to get this clear space, that's the singular goal that I think threads many different schools of meditation.
Well, let's stop there and take our first break and come back. You're listening to Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Conan Milner. He is the health editor of the Epoch Times. And before the break, we were talking about what meditation is, your goal in meditation, and being one with yourself where you can empty your mind of all sorts of thoughts and feelings. It sounds like it's hard to do. I think, is it like a muscle? You just have to keep doing it, and with shorter amount of times, and just kind of extend it. I can't imagine people can just jump into this without really practice.
I think that's a good comparison. It is like a muscle that you have to exercise. However, I have talked to people who seem to take to it right away. So maybe there's a talent element to it, or maybe mm-hmm. they don't have those thoughts that they're battling with that they need to clear out. For me, every time I sit down to do it, there's at least 5 minutes, sometimes longer if I'm struggling with certain anxieties, where finding that clarity is hard. And I think that that is the initial hurdle with meditation. I hear so many people talk about giving up the first time or the first few times because they can't do it. They, they're trying so hard not to think, and these thoughts just pop up. And that's just part of the process. And I always say, if you just be patient and wait through it, that you do finally reach a point of clarity. And even when you do reach it, it only lasts so long. Some other thought will pop in, and you're right back there doing the same thing again. It's one of these activities that's incredibly simple. And it's just a singular goal, but very challenging to achieve.
Yeah, I think everything that you have value for, you have to work for. That's what, in my life, I find that. And, there's a lot of, Eastern culture associated with it. I'm familiar with Tai Chi and Qigong as two modalities. And Qigong for me isn't, moving energy and releasing things that are stuck. There's an amazing movement away from, you're like not conscious of anything. I guess it's a version of meditation. And to me, that's a little bit more, active, where I don't do it. The Qigong master just kind of starts the process and I just go along for the ride. So it sounds like there's a lot of different ways either you can be active or more passive at it. Is that one way to see it?
Perhaps. I think the classic meditation people think about is you're sitting there probably in lotus position, if you can make your legs do that, and your body's not moving. But like you mentioned, yoga and Qigong, which I'm more familiar with, your body is doing different things to move around energy. However, your mind is still trying to maintain or reach that stillness. And personally, I find it easier, let's say, to reach it when I'm moving, because my busy mind is occupied with these activities. Sometimes mm-hmm. if I'm just sitting there, perhaps I have the leisure to have other thoughts enter my space, and I'm just don't have the same focus or attention. So in that way, Qigong can be a good entry point for getting into this more still space of a seated meditation.
Now, I know that in Chinese culture, it's like a health practitioner using meditation, Qigong, Tai Chi, all those sorts of things. Do you know if there's any quantitative findings or studies that have shown that if you do this, well, I know your anxiety would be less, your stress is a great stress reliever, much better than taking some pharmaceutical, I can imagine. But are they seeing that there's really changes in the physiology of the person who does this regularly?
There are. I'm not familiar with the whole gamut of research on Qigong, but I know that I've read a lot from different schools. The one that I'm most familiar with, because it's the type I practice, is Falun Gong. I've talked to many different scientists about their exploration of this discipline. And one doctor that I talked to, Dr. Margaret Trey, she has done her research through surveys, just asking people what's their experience. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot like what we're talking about. Clearer mind, lessened anxiety. She's looking at research now, or looking to research now, how this affects physiology in terms of inflammation and cognitive ability. I talked to another scientist, Dr. Ben Bendig, and he strictly focused on the cognitive and physiological effects of Falun Gong that gave them practitioners boosted energy levels and a more positive mood. And a lot of these findings you see in studies of other types of meditation. So it's not necessarily unique to this discipline, but it does show that different types of meditation can create similar states.
Well, I'm going to ask a separate question, because the Falun Gong practice is being, we know if we read Epoch Times and follow what's going on in the news, it's been really under attack from the Chinese government. I'm just curious, is there a reason why? Is there something that gets released, like the individual being able to be, I wouldn't say self-sufficient, it's a bad way to put it, but they feel good about themselves and they don't want to be subjugated by anybody. Is that something that is pervasive in Falun Gong? Why are they being endlessly attacked?
This is a great question, and I don't have an easy answer for you. From what I understand, when the practice was first introduced to the Chinese public in the early 90s, the government was a big supporter of it. And there were some high-ranking members in the party who were particularly interested in how this could save the country from healthcare costs, because mm-hmm. people had, in some cases, miraculous healings that developed from their practice. The persecution that you're referring to that started in the late 90s seemed to be the campaign of one leader in particular, Jiang Zemin. And from what I can tell, from what I've read, it was an issue of jealousy. There was, at one point, there was more people who claimed to practice Falun Gong than were card-carrying communists. And I think that it was a hard pill to swallow to see that there was this group of people who were more devoted to this peaceful practice than to the system of control that he was at the reins of. So it's crazy to think that so much torture and incredibly horrible things have occurred just from jealousy. But that's my understanding of it.
That is really tragic, honestly. But it also, the fact that people still practice it is a testament to the human will and the willingness to be free and to find your joy. And I think that's really key to any long-term health condition. You actually have to feel good about yourself and feel good and hopeful. And I think it all comes from within, as we discussed at the beginning of the show. It doesn't come from people telling you how awesome you are. It's very fleeting. It doesn't mean anything. But when you get up in the morning and you feel like I'm doing the right thing, I feel good about what, myself, nobody can really denigrate that or destroy that. And that's really powerful when you think about it.
Exactly. There's a friend of mine who lives in the neighborhood. Sometimes I go on walks with him. He doesn't practice Falun Gong. He practices another type of meditation. But what he has come from, his life before this, where he was an addict in many ways. He had a troubled past, a sex addict. Lots of drugs were involved. He just kind of had no purpose. Since he started meditation, of course, that has all fallen by the wayside. And his temptations are still formidable, but they're easier to control, and he can keep these temptations at a distance because of the, like you say, the freedom that he gets from this practice that, you know, nothing can compare to that.
Mm-mm. And it's something that's, there's abundance in it. There's no lack in this mindset. There's nothing that will constrict you because it just is, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that, great way to put it. There's nothing confining you. It's you can go as far as your mind will let you.
That's pretty powerful. The mind is that's the most important. Well, the brain, most important organ we have. Everything comes from that inspiration, creating something from nothing, being able to be. To roll with the punches and to find the best that you can out of situations and learn from them. I mean, that's what being human is, isn't it?
It's everything, Dr. George. You know, sometimes I think people are attracted to meditation because they hear stories of superpowers that might develop. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you from 20 years, I've never been able to levitate. I can't bend spoons with my mind, but I have the space that I can carry around with me, this space between, you know, who I really am and these outside influences that are always whispering in my ear. And to have that space to make decisions, to assess situations, that's the greatest power I could think of.
Yeah, no one can take that from you either. That to me is that your true self, your soul, who what makes you you and makes you unique is everybody's superpower, really. If you can find that, cultivate it, not let anybody denigrate it or take it from you, that makes everybody who can do that extremely powerful. And everybody's different. I don't subscribe to people are better than others. Everybody's different and we all have a gift. We just need to find what it is. And I can foresee that meditation gives people the space to step away from all the other things and concentrate and find what that thing is. Would you agree with that?
For sure. Once you're in touch with, you know, your essence, essentially, then you're not going to be thrown off course, or not as easily anyway. You're solid in your purpose and, it's you're on a mission.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that mission when we take our next break, because I think that's the crux of what meditation is about. So let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Conan Milner. He is a health writer for Epoch Times, and people need to go to theepictimes.com and you can read his blogs there. And the one that we're talking about is Good Reasons to Meditate, which came out on November 12th. It's an excellent read. And one thing that I want to make sure that people understand is that there is actually a foundation to what Falun Gong practice is. And you mentioned in your article something about basically the foundation, the principles of it. Can you go a little bit into that?
The wheel.
The law wheel.
Oh, okay. So that is, this describes what happens in another dimension with Falun Gong. So the main text in the practice is called Xuan Falun, and it means turning the law wheel. There's this idea, and Buddhism shares a similar idea that, you know, you've heard of this karmic wheel before. Like I said, it's something that exists in another dimension, but we can picture the same mechanism or rotating force as like the planets or, you know, the universe, these celestial bodies that just rotate as a matter of course.
It's interesting. And the basic, it's a moral foundation to this, right? Compassion, being truthful. I think empathy would be on that list. And it's the thing that makes us actually, to me, a better society. If people would all practice this, we wouldn't be in situations that we find ourselves in.
Definitely. One of the things I came across when I was researching this article was that, with Ewean and psychoanalytic therapists who were looking at meditation in the 40s and 50s, they didn't really encourage their clients to do this. It was, they thought it was a regressive and encouraged dissociation, and ignored what, you know, what they consider the most important, this unconscious thing. But we've seen, and Dr. Margaret Trey, which I mentioned before, is one of these pioneers, therapists who are incorporating meditation into their practice of helping people heal. When you meditate, like I've mentioned before, the goal is to find this clarity of mind. But I think that what comes out of that and what you find when you clear away all the nonsense is that, our mission, as we mentioned before, is to be good people, to be of service, to express compassion, to have tolerance. And, we really find our true selves in that experience.
I mean, this whole COVID lockdown situation that we've come through and hopefully be over soon, it's an opportunity to actually have time away from all the distractions. It's stressful being with your partner probably at some points, but finding a space that you can gather yourself. This is a time that we need to do this because it's a time to refuel. That's what happens with me when I'm engaging in energy medicine or meditation. And it allows you to be more mindful of what's important. I think we do a lot of stressing ourselves out and beating ourselves up over things that really, when you think about it, really don't matter. I guess this is a way to really hone in on what really counts. That's not what we're being told most of the time.
Yeah. I when I think about, what we've been through these past, most of the year now, I see a divide between, people who've weathered this well and those who haven't. And it really, to me, boils down to what kind of, stuff have you been putting in your mind? If it's nothing but this, fear porn news that's telling you to be afraid all the time, that's what you're going to get out of it. Anybody I know who's taken this opportunity, like you've described, which in my opinion is a gift, to refuel, they have, they've kind of been reborn, I guess is the best way I can say it. Even people I know who are not meditators, those who've sought out nature, walks in the woods or walking to the lake. I live in Chicago, and so the lake's not too far away. Mm-hmm. That can create a meditative experience, in my opinion. The influence of nature, if anyone's looking for a teacher, that's the best one I can think of. When you're in nature and you have these rhythms that are slower and more makes you feel more connected than the kind of modern rhythms that we're constantly subjected to, we can take a deep breath and find ourselves again. And if I could get anything for people to, if I could have anyone get something from out of this, it would be to seek that that type of frequency, to seek that type of experience where it's just you and an open field or the woods, and discovering where you're at in that larger space.
I couldn't have said it better. It is about frequency and energy and color. And I had a show, I guess, a few months back, talked about how color and sound, you know, they literally help your cells vibrate and provide energy. And mind and body are connected. I say it all the time to my patients. You are what you think. And if your thinking is muddled or stressed, or you're too afraid to even venture, then that's going to be a problem with how your body and how your cells interact. It's all like a beautiful harmony. Everything has its place. And I think you're absolutely right. I love going out into nature and just looking at the perfection of each animal. They are given gifts to help them thrive in whatever environment they're in. We're the same way. We just have to figure this out again, don't we?
Totally. You're making me think of this. In ancient Chinese medicine, they had this idea that to attain good health, you have to reflect the natural world inside yourself. So they'll talk about different elements that are in the body, wood and fire and water. And it kind of sounds cryptic at first, but the main goal is to try to embody the same kind of balance and peace that you see in nature.
It's harder. Actually, it's probably easy to do that if you just disconnect, because it happens naturally. It's all these other outside forces that are pulling us away from that. I think if we all spent time doing that, we wouldn't be having time to hate each other, because it doesn't matter. Why can you hate someone who's different than you? Because they're not taking anything from you. They're here just like you are, finding their purpose, and therefore you can coexist with each other and actually balance each other and bounce ideas off. I mean, we're just doing this in a very artificial manner, and I don't think it's not natural. I think that's why there's so much friction, and we're working against ourselves, and there's so much illness, and there's so much anxiety. I mean, the psychological damage that's being inflicted over the past year is just horrific. I feel bad for everybody who's fallen into the trap, whether that's a senior who's been alone, or people who are afraid to go to work, or people hating on somebody who didn't wear a mask. I mean, they just have all these ways of dividing us, but we need to think and disconnect. There's no way that we can continue in this mode. I just don't think it's tenable.
I agree. I really feel that a lot of the media that people are consuming right now is not to inform, but to create this kind of conflict that you're talking about. And I can see the manifestation of it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the people who are able to step away and find themselves again and shake it off and sober up, that's when they realize what's happening. But when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to separate yourself from this this influence. And and like I said before, I think that this is, for me anyway, the greatest gift that meditation gives, to be able to separate yourself from the outside influences that make us do things that we're ashamed of or wish we hadn't, or, you know, something that's inauthentic to us.
Well, you know, I wonder if there's a bigger picture why, because I don't believe it was this coordinated before, where the media was so arrayed against the individual. To me, it seems that it's happened over the last, 8 years, 10 years, but it's really become an art form for them. But, you know, I think we have the power, and you just described how you take it back. You disconnect, you find your inner self, you find that place that makes you feel good, and you share that. If there's no way that someone feels good about themselves can be nasty, I just don't think it's possible. It's so counter to that energy. It's like having energy, abundant energy, and then just sapping it. It's when you feel the difference, you just can't go back, can you?
For sure. Finding what your authentic nature is essential to living in this world today. Because like you said, I totally agree that the last 8 to 10 years have been a concerted effort to divide and conquer. And the people who have fared best are those who don't buy into it, who are able to keep it at arm's length, and refuse to let it enter their space.
Well, I just hope that number continues to grow, and as we get further along through this, and we realize, you know, we're all going to make this, we're going to make it, we're going to come out the other side. This is not the end point, and that we control our destiny. I think a lot of that energy will switch and go positive. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.